Hey everybody, welcome to Hobbs and Friends at the OSR. I am your host, Jason Hobbs, and I'm really excited to be on the mics tonight. This is kind of a tie-in with some things I've been talking about on Random Screed. So I have two great guests for me and for you guys, the listeners. It's none other than one of the masterminds behind Tuesday Night Games, Sean McCoy. How's it going, Sean?
Great. Glad to be here.
Yeah, when we talked at Origins, you were like, oh, I already have this, I have that, I'm ready. It's like, you weren't hinting at anything or anything, were you?
I was ready to come on the show. I just wanted to put that out in the universe.
Well, I should let everyone know that we also have Drink, Spin, Run. Don Stroud makes another appearance on Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. How's it going, Don?
I'm here.
I saw you at Origins, so. And you made it seem like you really... Oh, wait. No, I guess we already done this, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the first time, Don.
Yep.
It feels like the very first time. All right. So I think the majority of our listeners is going to know who Don is. He's obviously one of the co-hosts of the faded podcast Drink, Spin, Run. But Sean McCoy is famous in some circles, but I don't know if you're that famous yet in this one. What do you think about that, Sean?
Yeah, I'm probably not super well known in the RPG community. I was just an Ennies judge, though, which kind of very, very slightly increases your notoriety. I don't think people pay that much attention to who the Ennies judges are, though.
It seems like some people do because I see every year, hey, you should vote for this any judge in the future. But I mean, when you're talking about thousands of people, yeah, I don't think a lot of people do. But that's a good question. I didn't even have this on here. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience as an any judge?
So being an any judge is a lot of fun. You get sent all the RPG products that get submitted for free. So it's great if you want to fill out your library a little bit. But it's kind of like jury duty in that I think everybody should try to do it once in their lifetime because you get to give attention to products or designers or illustrators that maybe wouldn't get that attention normally. And you get to put sort of your taste at the forefront, and it's just sort of a way to chip in, particularly if you have a certain subculture of role-playing games that you more closely align with, making sure that that's represented. So if you're OSR or even if you're, you know, story gamer or whatever, like just thinking of it like a representative democracy and just making sure that there's someone there to argue for the strengths and virtues of the products you enjoy. I think it's a good thing to do.
All right, cool. So Don, I know you weren't an Ennies judge, but I was with you at the Ennies. And do you have any thoughts on, like, do you like think Sean rigged it for the DIY Art House OSR people?
No, I don't really think that was an issue.
That was a joke, guys. I mean, nobody else laughed, but
no,
because yeah, people say not, stuff like not, that. People make those funny. Kinds yes. of accusations. People, yeah.
It's a little too soon.
I think people ascribe these Machiavellian intentions to what, from my experience, seems like a group of hardworking RPG enthusiasts who try their best year over year to make the awards run smoother, make sure everybody gets heard, that kind of thing. And there's very little cabal style, like, let's put our thumb on the scale sort of thing. There's a lot of like trying to build consensus among the judges and arguing and judges being very open and clear with like, well, this is my bias and this is my bias. Let's duke it out, you know, which I think is why there's multiple judges and not just one or two. There's five and we have five picks to make. And so I think you get to say like, okay, well, I'm not the story game person. So you've got to tell me if this is your favorite story game of the year. Everybody's expected to weigh in and read and take a close look at everything. Right. But obviously everybody's not going to love everything that comes out and people are going to have different tastes, you know, but you do see a lot of people going, I don't even like X type of game. And I thought this was good. So, just by sheer value of the fact that you have so much product to go through, it actually helps out to be able to lean on some people and say like, okay, these are, you know, this designer, you know, this company, Would you say this is a high-quality release for them or a low-quality release? Here's my gut instinct, but I'd never heard of this game before this year. You know, that kind of thing.
Nice.
Awesome, yeah.
That's interesting.
Sure.
I should have. We should have done more on that, maybe. Maybe we will sometime. But, Don, what do you think as far as that goes? They're, like, talking about changing stuff at the Ennies. Have you been paying any attention to that?
Yeah, what's the big change? Like, they don't want publishers to weigh in anymore. Is that the deal?
I don't know, Sean.
publishers publishers and designers very affiliated with one single publisher are no longer allowed to stump for judges. No longer allowed to say, like, hey, vote for this guy. They've been really favorable to us in the past. But they gave everybody a heads up on that. I think they're trying to get better about how we nominate judges to get more, like, one, a better cross-section of the role-playing game populace represented, but also judges use their real names and just step right out and say, this is me, I'm so-and-so, and these are the games I like, vote for me. So it's just sort of, you know, it's not like a national election, so it's had to go through rounds of becoming more and more refined.
Which you had to do that too, right? I remember reading your bio, like, when you first said, hey, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I just wrote, you know, they ask you 30 questions or whatever, and I said, oh, these are the games I've played this year. These are the games I like. These are the games I don't like.
Right.
You know, this is how I think I'd do it. And then it's not that that's the worst system in the world, but you just vote for people who like the same games that you like. So it could get better, you know, and I think the crew that's working at the Ennies does a good job at addressing that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's been fairly hands out, even if it's funny, people assign all sorts of, like, oh, they only like these kinds of games, or they only like these kinds of games. When the truth is, it's like a popular vote. You know, the nominating committee gets to select a group of nominations, but most companies are pretty well represented in those meetings, you know, where people love certain, there are people who have been Chaosium fans from the beginning and people who are Lamentations people, but not that's the only thing they like. You know, you'd be surprised at the judges who really go hard for one company and then go hard for a company that would seem to be its rival, you know.
Well, I would hope that that's what would happen, to be honest. People would just know what they like and why, and then, you know, try and convince the other judges that that's what they should like as well, right? But I think that's the way that it should work.
That's my experience.
That's cool. Yeah. I don't know about the whole putting it out to the popularity vote afterwards. To me, that's more broken, but I don't like to complain about things without having a better solution. So I retract my complaint.
Sure.
But it must not work because I didn't win.
Oh, that's right.
All right, so did you want to say anything about what Tuesday Night Games does, Sean, or should we let Don talk about something? Don, I heard there was a rumor that Drink Spin Run might come back. Is that accurate?
I don't know where you heard this, but, you know, you never know. I think it was just really nice to hear people when I went to Gen Con and the after parties and whatever, the hanging out, like, oh, man, I miss it so much. I love you guys. It'd be great to hear you guys again. So I don't know, like, I was kind of pumped about it, but it's a lot of work. And usually, you know, when you're thick in the work, you don't really hear that stuff. You're just like, no one appreciates this. You know, I'm just plodding through doing this for nobody. Not that you do it for yourself, but it's great to hear any kind of feedback,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. I guess we're all kind of podcasters, Sean. I didn't even know that you had a podcast until I saw it on your website. But, I mean, maybe you can run off for a minute or two and talk about Tuesday Night Games.
Sure. So Tuesday Night Games is a company that I co-founded with Alan Girding. And we're mostly known for light party games, like Two Rooms and a Boom, That's Not Lemonade, World Championship, Russian Roulette. But our first love is actually role-playing games. That's how we got into the hobby to begin with. And so I started working on Mothership in the background while we were preparing for different conventions, that sort of thing. And it's a departure thematically and stylistically from the kinds of stuff we normally make, but we feel very at home making role-playing game content. Alan grew up playing Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. I grew up playing Dungeons & Dragons. And so we were both really excited to explore that and see if there was maybe an audience for both kind of the silly, light, easy to play games that we make in the board gaming world, and also this dark sci-fi horror role-playing game. see what kind of crossover we have there. And we also do a weekly podcast called the Tuesday Night Podcast, just about board games and stuff going on in the tabletop gaming world. All right,
awesome. So you guys check that out, you board game people. And I do think that there is a pretty big crossover, if my experience at conventions is any indication, where we'll be playing Call of Cthulhu or Paranoia over here, and then an hour later, when everyone's drinking down at GaryCon, we're playing Happy Salmon. So that's a pretty big indication right there. But let's talk about how we know each other. Obviously, Don, you and I met a long time ago playing in what? Do you remember now? Adam's Game? Was that the first one?
It was a Fate game that somebody was running. Was it Adam running Ray. The Fate game?
No, you're right. It was Adam, I think. But
Adam was running Fate. It lasted for a couple sessions. We all didn't like it much. Then we switched to like Dungeon World, which we didn't like a lot. Then we tried to like take that setting and put it into like LOTFP, yeah, maybe. Right? Lamentations. But we also played your 5e game, at least Ray and I did.
That was Bird that played.
Yeah, we've played a lot of games. Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. Didn't Ray play?
No. He showed Ray up didn't. Once just to heckle us, but other than that. And actually, yeah, Sean, yeah. Do you remember that we met playing in an online DCC game that Don was running?
Did we really? Oh, wow.
I actually didn't remember this at all.
Do you now?
I do now.
It was Kamaleon thing.
The weird gods thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like the rising gods.
Small gods.
Small gods, right. Because I had this huge thing I was working on. And I don't know what happened.
It was terrible. That's what happened.
It was terrible. But then I think we even covered this on one of your podcasts I was on. Like, you were like, oh, wait, I get what you were doing now. Like, you were doing exactly this
thing I had asked you to do.
And we were just freaked out. Right. You asked me to do a thing. I did it. That was a weird group. No one really knew each other. And I just kind of sat back and let you guys do things. And it wasn't the right group for that.
Yeah. And just in that situation, I think another time it might be, because weren't you trying to run maybe Attack of the Frogs as well? Is that what it was? Or was it something else?
I was just running some homebrew.
Oh, I thought it
stuff.
Was a touchdown.
Can we swear on this podcast? Can we swear on this podcast?
I don't care.
All right. So anyway, yeah. I forgot that you guys had met that way.
But I think really our friendships were consummated at the cons this year. I really had a good time meeting you in person, both of you guys, because I had never met you before either, Don, right. At Origins.
Yeah, that's the first time we met in person. Yeah.
Yeah. I had talked about this a lot on Random Screed, actually, and I thought it was really cool doing the stuff and hanging out with all your townie people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually heard that one.
What about you, Sean? What did you think about that?
I love Random Screed. I love the cons. It's like summer camp, right? You have these intense in-person friendships for 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks out of the year. Day in, day out, and then you separate and go your separate ways and go back to your online friendships. So it can really feel like summer camp, like, oh, everybody's different, and oh, there's new people, and are they gonna think I'm cool, you know, these people that I've met online. It could be a bundle of insecurity and anxiety at these shows, but it was really great to meet you in person and break some bread and just get to know you a little bit. It was fun.
You guys introduced me to Eric and Bird, and that was pretty. Meeting another Bird was weird already, but Mike, if you listen, it was nice meeting you, brother. All right, we've been babbling about this for a long time. This is maybe tops the longest introduction. I don't know. So let's move on to what we've been playing. So Don, I know you don't play anything, so why don't you start?
I have been playing nothing. I was trying to run some Mutant Crawl Classics, and I like whenever the summer hits, I'm like, all right, cool. I don't have to wake the kids up for school. I can play late. And then I forget that. Oh, there's this graduation party. Oh, so-and-so is getting married. Oh, I have to go do this. Oh, we're going out of town. Like, and it was a Thursday night game, so that's kind of close to the weekend. It was never happening. People were calling it. I was calling it. yeah, so I was running that. I was running Hive of the Overmind. And we actually did like 3 or 4 sessions. And then I was like, I didn't necessarily lose interest, but I was like, oh, I get paid to run one game and it's not MCC. It's Mothership. And I don't get paid to run it.
Because you've never ran it. Isn't that the story?
No, I've run it several times, of course.
What about you, Sean? You want to talk about anything you've been playing lately?
Sure. We play Mothership in my home group every Monday, every other Monday when I'm in town, which has been great. The group requests it. You're always looking for playtesters when you're designing content, and you can burn out your friends really quickly playing the games that you design because it's their Monday night. It's their like weekend. They want to have fun, and they don't necessarily want to trundle through your half-baked setting or game design or combat mechanics or whatever. But week after week, they've been coming back saying, no, 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 more Mothership, which has been huge for me. And then I have a niece and nephew who are about 7 and 11, and they're right at that age where I want to start getting them into Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games and things like that. And so to get them into that, we play like a car role-playing game, like a road trip role-playing game whenever we're in long road trips together, where we act like there's been a zombie apocalypse on Earth. It's a touchstone they're pretty familiar with from Walking Dead and that sort of thing. But they play themselves in their house in this world. And so we just do it like, okay, zombies have taken over. What's the first thing you guys do? Well, the nephew wants to go get guns and the niece wants to barricade the house. Okay, well, what are we going to do about that? So we just talk through it. And then I have a little D6 on my phone and we do, you know, 5 and 6, something good happens, you know, 1 through 4, something bad happens, or we work out the odds between us. And we play that just sort of to get them any idea of what a role-playing game is like. And it's great because they have instant buy-in because they can answer questions about what they want to do. They know the rules of the world they live in pretty well. They don't have to think of like fantasy. Can I cast a spell? Can I jump off a mountain? Can I fly? They can think very clearly. They need food. They need like shelter. They want to save their friends and family. But it's also cool because this dark stuff comes out of them. Like I give them the opportunity to join with this co-op of survivors, but they had to give up half of their stuff that they had acquired. And if they didn't join, then they'd be outsiders and it would be known that people could scavenge from their house or attack or raid them because they refused to join the co-op. My niece, who's like 7, My nephew says, like, well, let's join them. They're a bigger group than us. We have to join them. And my niece is like, well, they could just say that we could join them, take half of our stuff, and then they could not help us. Which was a very cynical observation about the universe from a 7-year-old girl. But I liked that. I liked that we could get into the sort of stuff with them, and they had a lot of fun. And so I'll give them homework, like, the next time I see you, you have to have a flag drawn for your survivor group, or you have to have a name for your bunker compound. You have to come up with a name. And they get into that sort of stuff. And so, like, it's on me to bring the board games and role-playing games into life as the uncle. And I've always got, like, a copy of, like, not Mincer, Moldvay Basic. I've always got, like, a Moldvay Basic set in my backpack to play with them with a bunch of hacked stuff from, like, Black Pudding and all these other OSR zines once they're ready to roll. And I think they're really close to being ready to jump into their first full-fledged D&D game.
As everyone should have Moldvay in their backpack and Hobbs and Friends with the OSR zines.
I've got those too.
<I'm> just kidding. All right. So on Tuesday nights, I do the live stream Kalmata live game. I think I'll mention this here. Tomorrow night, we're running a long Kalmata live game for 7 hours for charity. So I will put the link in the show notes to the charity and people can donate and affect the game as it's happening. So I'm really kind of just hoping for a TPK about 1 hour in and everyone can just donate their money and we can all go to bed. But I doubt that's what's going to happen. It'll probably be a bunch of Jose making fun of everyone, like it always is. Oh, and so I also
be tomorrow on August 31st.
Yes. Oh, right. Yeah, this is a podcast, isn't it? They won't hear it for like 2 weeks from now. So yeah, that game that we ran, I'm sure it was awesome. All right. So also, I'm playing 5E with Edwin Nagy on Wednesday nights. I asked Edwin a while ago to run a game. I wanted to learn more about it and have a guy who knows what the heck he's doing run it. And Edwin Nagy is one of the writers for the Midderlands. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He also writes for Lesser Gnome and for Frog Gods. Super cool guy. Awesome guy to meet at a con. If you ever get the opportunity, you should talk to him. Recently in that game, I mentioned this on Random Screed not long ago, we pretty much kind of had a TPK and everyone got separated when they woke up. And we played the game and he made them take off their headphones. This is an online game. So they couldn't hear what was happening. And we actually ended up being so separated that my guy thought that they were going to do something else. And they were like, oh no, he must still be there. And we used to be soldiers together. So we're going after him. And so now they're like, they're going right back into the place that we all got our asses kicked previously to try and find my character that's not even there. So so I don't know if I'd ever do that to anyone in a live face-to-face game, but like I could just do whatever while they were, you know, messing around. But so like I sat here for like an hour and a half listening to these guys do the wrong thing. Not necessarily the wrong thing, I guess, but the thing that wasn't going to get us back together, really. So kind of funny. All right, so everything about you, Don, you've done this before. Sean, I think you said that you had something prepared. Go for it, brother. Everything about you, you told me I already have it. I have my everything about you story.
My story is about meeting you and just a sweet thing that I noticed. We met at Origins. And if you haven't been to a convention before, they're disgusting. They're just fetid, rank places, particularly the men's bathrooms. I've seen it at Gen Con where they bring out basically these like giant pool noodles and they throw them in the men's bathroom against the wall and they soak up all the piss that drips or falls from the urinals or that misses. They're the worst places in the world. In fact, one time at Origins, Don was trying to outgross out my business partner, Alan, and licked his own palm after like a day of like touching people, shaking hands, counting money. And he came down with a fever within hours and he couldn't work the rest of the show from licking his own palm, which is something Don does a lot. But for me, Jason, we had just met and we went into the bathroom and did our business and I'm leaving. And I saw you tipped the bathroom attendant, the janitor. And he was like, oh, no, you know, I don't take. And you can cut this out if it's embarrassing. But he was like, no, I don't take tips. And you're like, no, man, keep it. Like, they're really clean and I really appreciate that. And he was like, oh, thanks. And I don't know. I just thought it was like a sweet moment. Nobody was going to see it. I mean, I saw it. Now I'm talking about your podcast. So any altruism there is all gone. But I just appreciated that from a very human perspective, you saw that a lot of conventions are giant places for entitled babies to get together and buy overpriced products. But there's like a real human cost to the people who live in these cities day in, day out that a lot of nerds can ignore. So it was very telling of me that you did not. And I thought that was just a really, really sweet thing. That's my story.
Oh, okay. Nice. That is something, everything about you and me, I guess. So that's cool. Don?
And me. I have a couple corrections. I actually deep-throated my fingers to win the concert. And I did come down with a horrible fever, and I was very sick. But I still worked my shifts, even though I was shivering and pale white and sweating all at the same time. I still showed up in the booth at, 9:45 and worked.
Scared off customers. Yeah,
I was going to say, probably, but yeah. Don is normally pale white, shivering and sweating all at the same time.
So true.
That was nothing.
Right. So no one noticed anything. This was also a convention where they actually had no product, so it didn't really matter that much.
That's true.
But they had a booth.
All I was going to say is that I've never heard of or obviously seen the movie Sunshine, which is Appendix M. So, and we'll get into that next. The main topic I want to talk about is this Mothership game that's blowing up the OSR, right?
I'd like to think so, but you never know.
Yeah, I think so.
A lot of product comes out, so I think a lot of games and products get a good 15 minutes there because there's so much good stuff coming out of the OSR right now.
All right, so let's. I think we should talk about it, and that's pretty much why I had you guys, although I really like talking to you guys. So, but Don, I think you're at the limit. I don't know.
Right.
No,
three strikes and you're out.
Seriously, though, I thought we would talk a little bit about the design process, and I saw you pretty much created Mothership through your blog, right?
I tracked the process of designing it pretty heavily from the beginning. I wanted to start a blog and start contributing to this sort of like OSR blogosphere, and I was working on it, and so I thought, you know, I could just do that work out in public. I think a lot of people are worried that somebody's going to steal your idea, but from having published for so long, I mean, so long, for like 5 years now, I could just say that the difference between like having an idea and then executing it, getting it all printed up, shipped, brought to market profitably, those two things are just so vastly separated that I wasn't super worried that somebody's going to run with sci-fi horror and just blow me out of the water. And if they did, that'd be great because I could play their game and I wouldn't have to work on it.
They definitely are on opposite sides of the spectrum. So an interesting part about Mothership to me, but before I say this, Don, you know, you didn't design it, but why don't you talk about what Mothership is for the listeners?
What Mothership is, let me tell you. A year ago at Gen Con 2017, it was just a one-page game with an adventure on that page as well that Sean wrote. We played it. I think we all enjoyed it because we wanted to continue playing. And then it just kind of spun out of there. Sean added tons of stuff to it. But it is basically this. If you watch Alien or Aliens, let's stop it there at the first two. Mash up a Sunshine. That's the game. Like, I just saw Sunshine for the first time a week ago, and I texted Sean. I'm like, oh, this is totally Mothership. It's Alien and Sunshine, and that's it. Because we've talked about all the other Appendix M, which is, you know, the Appendix N of Mothership. But it's basically, you watch those two movies, you can play it, right?
Absolutely. You can run it.
Yeah, so now, since Don did that so perfectly... and sarcasm. Sean, do you want to say what you think Mothership is?
No, I think Don's right. I think it comes from just wanting to run sci-fi, maybe sci-fi survival horror. I think one of the big unsolved problems in sci-fi role-playing games is you've got some of the greats like Traveller, Star Wars, right, Warhammer, and all these other games, and they're either too setting specific, right? Like, you have to play in Star Wars, which can also be annoying, right? Because like the time that's the coolest is the Empire and the Jedi, but there are no Jedi, and can't all play Jedi. That makes it dumb. So it's got all its own setting problems. Or they're just way too generic. Like Traveller, I've got like original Black Box Traveller and I love it, but the art does such a poor job of communicating not the setting, but the tone of the kind of game, that if you didn't read a bunch of like Doomerest or these Imperial science fiction, as maybe James Malchevsky would call it, who wrote Thousand Suns, which is kind of like a Traveller redoom. There are all these big science fantasy worlds with like Jedi light kind of stuff. And they're just too big. They're so big. I think it's hard to, even Stars Without Number, the really great Kevin Crawford sandboxing game, they all sort of come to you with this implied, like, well, you bring the setting, you bring the story, which I think is good. D&D does that too, but D&D has the dungeon, right? Like, you could start with the dungeon or the mega dungeon or the hex crawl or some of these pillars of classic play. And I don't know why, but for sci-fi, that's just harder to start coming up with planets and imperial galactic empires. I mean, that part's fun, but I don't know, it just seemed too generic. Like, sci-fi just seemed too big, too broad, not enough good content, or you were tied to a licensed property like Warhammer or Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you decided to go the horror route, right? because it's really a sci-fi horror.
Yes.
And to me, it's interesting that you really don't have setting fluff in here. The setting is kind of implied by the character classes and what their skills are and maybe what you expect them to do. But you don't really talk about it that much, like, oh, it's the year, da-da-da, and this is what's happening, right?
Yeah, those of us who have, like, touched Mothership a lot, Fiona Geist, Don Stroud, Jarrett Crater, and myself, and a lot of the playtesters and other writers, that's the thing we keep coming back to is, like, strong on tone and mood, but not strong on lore. Not strong on, like, well, there's an alien race, and they're called this. More like, this is the kind of trouble you can get into. These are the kind of breakdowns in the fabric of society. You know, it's hard for humans to communicate. There's no home. There's no earth somewhere that you can go back to and visit your family. So more like asking leading questions that can help wardens, which is what we call game masters or dungeon masters in our world, fill in those gaps for themselves. We want it to be implied that this is a dark universe that a lot of people are just scavenging or hopping from star to star to survive. But if you want to run it more Firefly or you want to run it more Aliens or Event Horizon, that's like up to you, you know. I think in the design guidelines that send out to new writers, there's some specific stuff like no named alien races like Romulans that are like trading partners. There's no like intelligent talking English speaking alien out there. That every monster is a boss monster. So like every encounter could be a TPK, no matter what. And we sort of set guidelines like that about what is and isn't Mothership, but nothing like you would see in say like World of Greyhawk. There's no gazetteer for what's officially canon Mothership. Though with the modules, we try really hard to offer up stuff that's setting agnostic where it's like, but specific where we could say, this is the dead planet. You could put it in your campaign world. Go, but it doesn't rely on you knowing who the Jedi are, who the Sith are.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty interesting and pretty original way to go about it, but it definitely hooked me and I had a lot of fun with it. So a lot of people talk about the layout and the thematic art. Do you want to say anything about that, or do you want to talk about why it's a zine and not like another kind of book, or what's... Because it's only a survival guide or something, is that?
Yeah, so the first book we have, we call the Player Survival Guide. It's like the player's handbook. So I'm a graphic designer. That's my background. And I'm also a board game designer. So in board games, you're constantly interacting with the board game itself as an object, as an interface. And I think too many people relegate role-playing game design to just a writer's medium. That is to say, like a writer can write it up like a piece of fiction, and it doesn't matter about the art, doesn't matter about the graphic design, doesn't matter about the material, the component that you're using. As long as the writer writes something cool, you're good. Now, that not to diminish the writers, because we have Fiona and Dawn are phenomenal writers. You want the best writing you possibly can have, but everything else is important too. I think Zach Smith said that role-playing game modules are like cookbooks. They're to be used under pressure, right? So like you've got something burning on the stove, you've got a lot of ingredients. That cookbook needs to be presented in a certain way where you're not flipping back and forth, looking if all the ingredients, basically if cookbooks were written like most role-playing game modules, you have to read paragraphs and paragraphs of text and all your ingredients would be buried in the middle there. They wouldn't be pulled out like nice clean stat blocks. So that influences how we write modules. From the beginning, we're talking about layout. From the beginning, we're saying, can this be a table? One of our design guidelines is Mothership products need to be able to be used for Mothership, but they need to be used for anyone else. There needs to be content in the game that you can take and pull for your Star Wars game or for your Traveler game or Stars Without Number game. So there needs to be a lot of useful content in there that could just be ripped apart. So we talk about that a lot. So that's, you know, any attention we get on layout, I think is just because we make it a priority. Whereas I think the standard right now is to have a nice 2-column layout. Nothing wrong with that. Piece of art every 4 or 5 pages or so. Table if you need it. But every time we're cracking it open, Don can tell you, like, it can get frustrating because I'll be a hard ass about, like, Well, can this be a flowchart? Could we make that a diagram? Could that just be an illustration with callouts? And it often means sacrificing paragraphs of beautiful text. But at the table, you know, we're trying to think what's going to matter most of the table.
Right. Yeah. As a writer, what do you think about that, Don?
I mean, it totally sucks because you write this great thing and then you're like, oh, Sean, that's about four lines too short. But I can remember like texting with Sean as far back as like 2 years ago, like, oh man, you know, why don't they do games like this? Like just, you know, cause even like a, you know, like a nice module from Goodman Games is like the maps in the middle, you got a page back and forth. I'm like, hey, you know, we should, you know, have the map and the text all on one page. So it's all there. You don't have to flip. Like we've been talking about this shit for like 2-3 years now. And it's nice to finally actually like, you know, put it in practice. Like,
awesome.
And it's something we have to teach. We more and more people are writing for Mothership and we're excited to like expand that like pool of talent and see what other ideas people have. But sometimes it is a lot like teaching a totally different thing, which is weird to me because role-playing games are old and I don't think we're, you know, way ahead of the curve or anything, but we're saying stuff like, okay, what's gameable about what you just sent me? Like you just sent me three paragraphs. I'm a player or I'm a warden. What kind of game can I get out of that text right now? You know, it's descriptive, it's beautiful, sets the scene really well, but how do I play what you just sent me? And we're asking those questions because those are our values. And other people are going to do it differently and have different strengths, but I think our strength is going to be
usability
at the table. Right? In fact, Don's pushed back on me about certain things where I didn't want to print the game in color. We could talk about the zine thing. I try to keep the games very cost effective right now for a couple reasons. Role-playing games live or die based on whether people are playing your game at the table. So it's more important to grow a player base than it is to put out the most expensive 400-page full-color hardback book. And board gaming, there's this shift towards people who are, you know, white-collar workers who have, you know, a lot of disposable income, that board games are made for them. Whereas if you go back to like Steve Jackson in the 70s, you can get Car Wars for like, I don't know, like $250. And I know there's like inflation and all these other things, but my point is if kids can't afford to buy these games, you're aging out the entire industry. And so it was very important to me that some kid with like a bent for horror could be able to afford the core rulebook of Mothership, you know? And so to do that, we wanted to keep costs low and that meant producing high quality zines. And there will come a time where we will make the nice $50 hardcover rulebook. But in the beginning now, OD&D started off as basically zines. I don't think there could be a better place to start. And it's physical. But anyway, we were talking about this and the core rulebook, the Player Survival Guide, is in black and white for, again, these cost-saving reasons. And I think Fiona started submitting her documents for her adventures in Dead Planet, and hers were all color-coded. She was like, I'm not a graphic designer, but, you know, I've stitched together these three maps I found online, and I've color-coded it so you know what's going on. And it was really good. Don, you remember that, right? Like she'd mark a door red and it went down to a red level.
But there's also another reason we did this too, which I think you're getting to.
Well, you pushed back and you were like, I was like, well, it's not color. Let's figure it out. And you were like, well, this is about usability, right? That's your big thing.
Yeah.
How much more is it going to be to go in color? And it just wasn't that much more. I doubled the cost of the book.
Right. But like the big thing was there was the map of the Alexis and it was really hard to tell what floor was which. And it was like, along with like the maps Fiona brought, like, oh, you can totally tell what's going on here if we did this like this. And then we're just like, yeah, man, this, you can look at it. You can tell which level the ship you're on. You can tell where the vents are, the ladders, like color coding just made sense for usability.
Don, like we started putting this stuff up online and we'd get not complaints, but we'd get notes saying like, this is a beautiful 3D isometric map. But how do I get which one's the top floor? And so, again, it was one of these things where you'll see this in nice WotC produced Dungeons and Dragons modules. They're beautiful color. They got the brown paper texture. They're illustrated maps that look like watercolors and they're really pretty. But the color isn't doing a lot of the heavy lifting either. You've got the like, well, blue is water. So that's helpful. But we were trying to make every part of the book enhance the gaming experience. And we started to find like, well, if we color code that, we can color code the planets so that the regions match up with the pages you need to flip to. And if we color code that, I mean, it was getting ridiculous towards like, maybe we should color code, you know, terms in the words.
in the hypertext, you should do that.
Yeah, exactly. So just all constantly right. asking all ourselves, right. how can we make this more usable?
And it is very usable, and I enjoyed playing it, but we're running out of so much sure. time. You're so talkative, Sean. I didn't realize, man.
Yeah, I'm a chatty Cathy.
You're getting after it. All right, so we're going to have to move on, man. I'm going to have to, you know, show some appreciation to the people that actually pay to support this show. People like Curtis Takahashi, Michael Hengali, and Isaac Eccles, all new patrons in August. So thanks, guys, for doing this. It is a... It's a labor of love for sure, and I can tell you that doing the production on your own is a lot more than I expected it to be. So if you want to be a patron of Hobbs and Friends, you can just go to www.patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. Sean, if someone wanted to know more about your mothership, how would they get in touch with you?
You could follow me on Twitter at Sean McCoy or at PlayTKG for the gaming company. And you can learn more about Mothership at mothershiprpg.com.
And we'll have that in the show notes. And Don, what about you? If someone wanted to talk more about spinning your drink.
Spinning my drink.
How would they get a hold of you?
I am on Google Plus, Don Stroud, two N's, D-O-N-N-S-T-R-O-U-D, at Don Stroud on Twitter, Facebook, if anybody uses that. But if you have like mothership questions, we do have a Discord device thing.
You do?
What's it called? Yeah.
We'll get an invite. We'll talk these guys into putting an invite on the Hobbs and Friends community on G+, which is 698 people strong right now. We're almost at 700. It's crazy. If all you guys bought Mothership, they'd probably have a hardback book.
Yeah. You guys should buy it.
All right. So why don't you say super brief last words, maybe about what you mentioned Dead Planet briefly. And I should say that Fiona is going to be on the show very soon. I just have to get the scheduling through. So I'm excited nice. About that.
Nice.
Anything else you guys wanted to say? Don, you go first.
Yes, I'm available for hire for all your needs.
What about you? What about you? Anything, Sean? You can just call Don. Anything you'd like to say, Sean?
No. I love the show, and I'm glad to see it moving. I'm a big fan of Random Screed too. I just really appreciate you having us on.
Awesome. I really appreciate you guys coming on. And I am going to say that Hobbs and Friends with the OSR is an extension of Rock River Games. Good day. Good night. Love you guys.